And then that's the secret to being a good salesperson. All this closing stuff, that just happens. If you keep that pipeline and you have that consistent energy, then it doesn't matter what sales consulting hoopla that you've been taught, they're all the same. They all work and they all don't work. If you keep the pipeline full, you'll just get sales. When I look at all my career of people who were talkers, people who were listeners, people who did this, people who did that, there's only one consistent variable, and that is level of activity and maintaining a full, robust pipeline.
Welcome to the More Clients, Less Effort podcast, where we provide expert insights and strategies to turbocharge your business growth. I'm your host, Tim Hyde, and in this series, we'll unpack the secrets, proven systems, and the sales and marketing strategies used by successful business owners to attract, convert, and keep A-class clients on autopilot. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur looking to scale your customer acquisition or a budding startup owner looking to crack the code on attracting the right clients, you've come to the right place. Join us on this journey to building a thriving business that leaves a lasting impact. Now let's get started. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of More Clients, Less Effort. Today, I am joined by Jeff Bogensberger. Jeff's an entrepreneurial visionary with a passion for building successful ventures on a global scale. Jeff's career spans across multiple diverse industries and continents and has cultivated a keen understanding of market dynamics and emerging trends. Now, Jeff, your career started in Canada and across the globe, mate, but tell me how you find yourself to be in Australia now.
I guess I've had lots of jobs before I started my official career. I was everything from short order cook to ski instructor to commercial fisherman, tree planter, English teacher in Korea. And then right around 2000, I decided time to grow up a little bit. And I went back to school, got my MBA. And when I came out of that, I worked as a consultant for a little while and realized that's not a world I really fit in well with. And then I joined my older brother. He had a startup going and he needed someone to lead sales. And so I was one of the first employees and we got going along. That was a company called Marketing Island. We had if you can imagine, Canva on steroids linked into a complete ERP solution that included all the accounting systems, warehousing, supply chain, everything all in the same system. We grew that for about 8 years. It was one of the fastest growing companies in Canada year in and year out. And then it was sold off and I wasn't an owner. I was just an early employee. And so when the new owners took over, very quickly, everybody who had been in that ride together kind of left because it went from something, an emotional passion to this just isn't fun anymore. It's just another job now. And then at that time, it was 8 years of full throttle. And when I stepped back, I was done, like stick a fork in me. I was fried. And I'd always dreamed of coming to Australia. Back when I was a ski instructor, I got offered a job to work at Monhotham and I turned that down to help a mate out and ended up on a fishing boat instead. So it was always in my head that I got to go to Australia at some point just to see what I missed out on. And I came here, a friend of mine from my MBA was doing business here and we hooked up and he introduced me to some of the people that he was working with. And I had nothing really pressing anywhere else in the world. So on a whim, I interviewed for a job and I got it. And that was 15 years ago. And now here I am in Australia.
Yeah, been here ever since. What was it about? I mean, you talk about that sort of marketing growth and in that sales role. You think sales and marketing has changed much in that time? And we're talking about the fundamentals here, not necessarily the technologies we leverage, but have the fundamentals changed?
No. Not at all. And I find that when I'm dealing with salespeople who are succeeding, they're doing the same things that they always have been doing, that successful salespeople have always been doing. And the ones that are failing are the ones that are trying to find shortcuts that just don't work. Yeah, I don't think there's any difference now than it was before. The fundamentals are still there.
Okay. We're going to drill into those in a bit more in a sec, but tell me about the Laughing Otter, right? You know, we were talking off air about 30 years of horrible bosses and so decided to become one yourself.
Yes.
Why the Laughing Otter? Tell me about, you know, how the Laughing Otter is a platform dedicated to, you know, creating meaningful change in the world. Can you talk to me more about that?
Yeah. So where it unfolded was there were four real key events that happened about 3 years ago, all within a, you know, a couple of years of each other. But there was the birth of my son, which heightened an awareness and a soft spot I've always had for children. So that factored in. A friend of mine took his life. And when that was mid or just before the start of COVID or early on in COVID, and I looked around and I realized that a lot of people were really struggling. And on a macro level, it had been, you know, 10 years of people just consuming really negative, nonstop news and content. I also finished up with my last job that I worked for, and I just didn't have it in me to go into another company and start again. And then I also turned 50. No, I don't look it, but I turned 50 and I went, and all of this kind of came to the realization I can't have the last third of my career to be about just making money for people, for the most part, that I don't even like or respect as far as their ethics and their morals. And I just wanted to leave a mark on this world, something that when my son is older, he can look and go, yeah, you know what? My dad did something pretty cool. And so that all of that combined. And then I have just an overall philosophy in life that, or belief that it doesn't have to be this hard. We create as humans artificial reasons to be angry, upset, to hate, when there's absolutely no reason for any of it. There's plenty of food. We have all the solutions available to us to stop climate change. Everybody could eat. There's no reason whatsoever for the hate, the racial, societal, nationalistic hate that drives us. That none of these things matter, but we create them. So I wanted to create something that's a lot more fun and counteracts a lot of that and gives people reasons to be happy again. And selfishly, it is a lot of fun these days because every conversation I have is about making people laugh, music, art, fun events, and everything. Like, that's way, way, way more fun than selling software or technologies that really don't have much positive impact on the world.
Yeah, I think the same thing. And certainly, you know, in my journey as well, I see a lot of business owners who are kind of doing this hard slog, kind of overcomplicating things and not really enjoying their business. And I'll think, well, if you don't enjoy it, you know, you have the opportunity to change it to be whatever you want. You could create the culture that want, you know, you're the leader in your business. If you don't like the products or the impact you do, no one else can change it but you. But you've got to have the desire and sort of, you know, motivation to kind of go and create that change, I guess, or courage to create that change that you want to see.
Yeah, well, that's it. And it doesn't feel like, sometimes it doesn't feel that easy to do. But once you take that first step, it really is just taking one step after the other. You pull a few levers, see what happens, and then you adjust, pull some more levers.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's pivot there and talk about the systems, sales systems you mentioned before, Jeff. And I know you've got a few that you use. Firstly, where do you think people go wrong with sales? Because I was asked this question the other day. In fact, it literally just popped up on my LinkedIn profile. You know, why don't people enjoy sales and how do you change that to something that's fun and enjoyable?
Well, where people go wrong consistently in as far as hitting targets goes is they focus on the wrong end of the pipeline. Every book and every sales technique and every consultant always focuses on walking the client through the sales process and how to close the deal. That is, if you have a great salesperson and a really bad one, there's about 10-20% difference that you'll have between absolute crap and superstar once a client is in the pipeline, providing that you're especially in this day and age where everybody's so well educated, they already know more about your product than probably your salesperson does. So the products sell themselves now, the services sell themselves now. It's just a matter of walking, hand holding until the close. And so where everybody fails, and ironically, it's actually the least expensive part of the whole process, is lead generation. The amount of people I see that just refuse to spend money on lead generation because they think, oh, cold calling, that's what a sales guy should do. Yes, he should, until his pipeline's full. And then your very expensive sales guy needs to be closing, needs to be working those clients through the process, upselling, all that wonderful stuff. So they don't have time to rejuvenate their pipeline. But you can get really inexpensive resources to keep feeding that pipeline so that, because if you don't, what ends up happening is sales guy does all a bunch of cold calling, fills his pipeline, all the deals come to a conclusion, win or loss, now the trough's empty again. Then the cycle repeats itself. But if you're constantly feeding the front end, then the salesperson, everybody always has 15 seconds or the 30 seconds it takes to book that initial meeting or to go to that meeting. What they don't have is the 8 hours that's required to, or whatever it takes to get enough leads every day into their pipeline. So that's the biggest mistake. And I've had this argument with way too many owners and bosses about that. Like, why are we not spending, in Australia, $20 an hour, you can get a really good lead generator. If you want to go overseas, it's much cheaper than that. Why are you getting your really expensive sales guys with all the experience doing what anybody can do? It's just a matter of consistency of just feeding that pipeline. So I think that's a huge mistake that people make.
Is that because designers generally don't want to do sales themselves, so they throw it at a sales guy, but they don't actually want a salesperson or a closer. A business development person who's doing that whole life cycle as you talk about it, right? Sales development work, and then we're doing the closing work.
I come from the tech world, and the tech world just does not understand sales. You get tech guys who build these companies and they think that cold calling component is, oh yeah, every BDM should be a hunter and go, well, they are hunters, but eventually the pipeline's too full. They got more important things to do, like going to have those meetings. So go just hire a couple of cheap, like not cheap, like I don't want to be, I'm not being derogatory, but inexpensive resources that keep that pipeline full. I introduced that to a company and they went from just getting going to now it's worth $100 million because every day, 3 or 4 new leads would get generated through this lead generation. And then the salespeople would use their skills and close those deals. But if you're expecting them while they're in meetings to be filling that pipeline, it just doesn't happen. It's just a natural cycle. And it's not because the salespeople are lazy or anything. They're just busy. They just run out of time. And everybody, like, what are you going to work on? The deal that's just about to close? Or are you going to cold call? Well, obviously, you're going to work on the deal that's just about to close. So that side of it. And then just as far as just making it fun, if sales isn't fun, go find another career. Because if you don't like just meeting people, getting out there, having conversations, building relationships. Like myself, like when I sell, especially like when I was in the tech world, I'm not a techie. So my customers would talk me in circles if I ever really went into tech talk. So my hour long meeting would be 5 minutes or 10 minutes of introduction of who we are as a company, 40 minutes about just whatever topic we went on, and you know, whether it was travel or fishing or the footy or ice hockey or whatever people wanted to talk about, and then 10 minutes of, yeah, okay, well, we can help you in these areas. But that's why sales has always been fun to me. I like meeting people. I like learning new industries. You know, when you're in something like tech, one day you're talking to a not-for-profit, next day it's a medical company, next day it's, you know, a transport company, and you start learning all these different industries. You're meeting people from all walks of life. And if that's not fun for you, yeah, go do something else.
Yeah, I think that's so true, right? And we kind of lose sight of the fact that sales and marketing are probably the most important functions in your business. They're not the only function, and they're not to say that other functions are not important, but it does give us a huge amount of comfort and security knowing that we have opportunities in the pipeline.
Yeah, well, the reality is, if you don't have sales and marketing, it is so ironic to me that people will outsource their marketing to an agency. Why would you outsource the single most important aspect of your business? And yet you bring things, like you keep things in-house that have no bearing at all to the success of your company. And why would you not invest in supporting the sales guys with top of the line marketing materials and whatever you can afford? But that's where, like, everything else that you do in a company becomes moot if you don't have sales. There's like in the startup world, I know lots of really, really, really bad companies that are successful and really startup or bigger that are really bad at what they do and really bad at their deliverables, but they're great sales and marketing companies. Apple's a perfect example of that. Everything is riddled with bugs. You can't link anything to anything. Microsoft, same thing. I just changed computers and it's been 3 weeks just trying to get my Outlook to work on my new computer. But these companies are amazing at marketing. Now, I also know a lot of amazing products and services that in the startup world that fall on the cutting room floor because they do not know how to do sales and marketing.
Yeah, these are one of my early mentors and, you know, used to say that, you know, two things. One, more sales solves a multitude of sins, presuming you're profitable when you do sell something.
Yeah.
And the second one was that, you know, being the best at what you do is not necessarily the goal to, you know, riches.
Yeah, that's right.
People don't necessarily expect the best. They just want something that works.
Yeah. And really the sad thing in this day and age, they're making their purchase decision on whether you tell them it works. But like the whole Silicon Valley mindset has changed. Like we're all so programmed now to accept flaws that, yeah, it's who gets the name out there the most, who shouts the loudest, and you know, Tesla is a perfect example of that. Like, you know, their batteries are dying in 3 years. They got no resale value, but yet they're, you know, a six-figure car. But it's all because Elon Musk, for whatever else he is, he's pretty good at getting his name out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about your follow-up process. I know something we touched on there, but you've got a process of follow-up. Let's break that down. What does that look like?
I've used multiple different CRMs. I have a very, very simple process that I think, like, I really believe that sales doesn't have to be complicated. And I just use some sort of whatever CRM that I was told to use, or I create my own and basically I just keep a running track of all the leads in my pipeline, and as long as there's still a little bit of smoke, I keep following up until it either dies or it ignites again. I don't think it's that hard. In solution sales, I can manage at least 100, 200 leads in my pipeline. It doesn't take that long to make a 30-second phone call, one-second phone call, because it's that follow-up that in today's buying process, it's a misnomer. I think it's a myth that you can change the buying process of most companies, of any company of any size now. The purchasing behavior is so regimented. You're not going to really change when somebody makes a decision. You can change whether they choose you or not, and maybe bring something forward by a week or two. But for the most part, it's pretty regimented. So what you want to do is maintain consistent follow-up so that you are there when the meeting happens, that where they go, oh yeah, it's time to go ahead with this. You've either just talked to them or you're just about to talk to them.
Yeah. It's so that, top of mind, isn't it? It's just putting that.
Yeah, it's simple.
Whether it's a visual pipeline or automation that says you need to call this person today, you need to call this person today, you need to call this person today. Here's your list of tasks. It's just that little bit of kind of systemization around the follow-up and depth of relationship. You're absolutely right. The depth of relationship that you are top of mind when they're making the decision about the thing you're going
to
buy.
Right. And my process is very simple. I need to call Tim. Call Tim. And then I might have one sentence that says, call Tim. He wants a quote, you know, or call Tim. He was waiting on the board. Call Tim. He was on vacation. Like whatever little trigger that reminds me, okay, that's what it is. And then if I don't remember through email or whatever, I always like, there's such a, I keep such a running track of all conversations in so many different places now that it doesn't take me long to remember why I'm supposed to call you. You know, and if you have the right platform in place, then, you know, you just quickly look and go, says, call Tim, click on that. Says, oh, Tim's from this company. This is his position. He's interested in these products. Okay. That's all I need to know. And then I call. If I don't get you, I move it to tomorrow. If I get you, depending on where the conversation is, you know, should I call you in a week? Should I call you in a month? Should I call you in a year? And that's it. And eventually if you're doing that right, eventually every time you open up your calendar, you got every day, you got 20 or 30 people you got to follow up with, and, you know, 3 or 4 meetings ideally. And then that's the secret to being a good salesperson. All this closing stuff, that just happens. If you keep that pipeline and you have that consistent energy, then it doesn't matter what sales consulting hoopla that you've been taught, they're all the same. They all work and they all don't work. If you keep the pipeline full, you'll just get sales. When I look at all my career of people who were talkers, people who were listeners, people who did this, people who did that, there's only one consistent variable, and that is level of activity and maintaining a full, robust pipeline.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And just having, I mean, if you can imagine trying to remember those 200 people in your head, that would be almost impossible. You need some form of system. I don't care if it's an Excel spreadsheet, you know, a Google Sheet, or your CRM to build that sort of rigor and process into following up. And even if it's not necessarily with customers, you know, if it's with strategic partners who refer you, build a system in your business somewhere that allows you as the most important salesperson in your business to consistently follow up with them. Right?
Yeah.
And once you've got that system dialed in, you can absolutely then go and hire someone to execute for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's if you get a nice, smooth running system that's nice and simple, that my knock on things like Salesforce and Dynamics is unless you're Telstra or Microsoft or where you just have an abundance of resources that just and time to do all this reporting and everything like that, unless you're those people, those really complex systems are just too complicated. There's only a couple of I just want to know the person's name, the title, who they work for, what product they're interested in, and what's the next date I need to call them. I don't need any other analytics, because even as a sales director, I know what all my staff are doing. All I care about is the high end number. You know, are we hitting target? Are we not? Everything else is all about activity, because I know if the activity is there, we're going to hit our numbers. Or our numbers are, we're never going to hit our numbers. So I don't need a whole bunch of like data analysis on information I already know. All that does is slow down sales teams. So if you can have a nice, simple process that captures the essence of what you need, and then so that people can just hammer out calls and hammer out meetings, that's what I always loved as a sales guy.
And I think that's you picked up a couple of really key points there. And, you know, as I said, sales doesn't need to be complicated. It just needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
And you just have to have some rigor around executing that system.
And it's like I liken it to the same as getting in shape. That like you can turn on the TV right now and there'll be somewhere somebody is trying to flog a diet or a new machine or new whatever, but they all work. The only thing that matters is, do you do it?
Yeah.
So if you want to if you want to lose weight, exercise. And the more exercise you do, the more weight you'll lose. That's simple. And it's the same with sales. The more people you talk to, the more people will buy from you. My simple selling strategy quote is that I guess I invented it, but is don't complicate it. Just tell the people who buy your shit that you sell your shit. And the more people that you do that, then you'll sell more. Like the more people that you tell, like, doesn't matter what it is. I sell houses. Tell 100 people you sell houses, you'll sell a lot of houses. You tell two, you won't. And same goes for cars, socks, kitchen equipment, doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And so true. And so true. Jeff, we're going to pivot a bit. We're going to do a quick fire to take us out today. If you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on?
For the next couple of years, I'd spend it on the Laughing Otter for sure. And I have a grandiose goal of being the Laughing Otter being responsible for this generation's Live Aid and all the money going to kids. And so I would spend the money on, in part, building the Laughing Otter community and getting that started.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. And you can find the Laughing Otter at thelaughingotter.com. So go and check that out. And you've got some really cool stuff over there. I love the mission that's in behind that, Jeff. You've got a team of 10. We spoke about that before. What do you think the keys are to building a great team?
Well, it starts right from the hiring process. Hire the people that can work, are the types of people that can work for you. There are certain people who like to be micromanaged, and there are certain people who like to be left alone. And you have to really be honest with yourself. What kind of manager am I? Or what kind of leader am I? In my case, I'm very much on the extreme side of macro managing. I believe in just letting people do their job and getting out of the way, but then being there to answer questions, to provide guidance, and to make the hard decisions. That's where I sit. But it really starts from the hiring process. Is hire people that fit your culture and how you like to lead, and who respond well to that kind of leadership.
What's your favorite childhood memory, and how do you think that has impacted the way you approach life now?
That's a good one. When I, like, my initial response was just a flurry of images of when I've been outdoors, around a fire, on a mountain, watching a sunset, camping. And it's all of that just experiencing life in its simplicity. And I think I've got away from that for a while in my career. And now I'm really getting back to realizing how much I just love nature and being outside and that, like, yeah. So that's, yeah. Well, my favorite childhood memories are all ones that are linked to that somehow.
Yeah. That's awesome. What do you wish you knew when you started the Laughing Otter?
Oh, when I started the Laughing Otter? It's relatively new, so I'll give you a little bit longer answer. I wish I figured out a lot earlier in my career that nobody else is all that special either. I kept thinking all the time that somebody had, like, everybody else had this magical answer, and they somehow knew some secret thing that I didn't know, where I just realized now that, especially in the business world, everybody's just relatively equal. Everybody tries really hard. And then there's just a lot of variables that are in and out of people's controls that just affect the varying degrees of success that people have. And none of that matters either, because, you know, it's really the most important thing is just how happy you are. And, but yeah, I wish it earlier in my career, I'd figured out that I have as much to bring to the table as anyone else does.
Yeah. That's awesome. Last one. What's a tool that you use on a sort of daily basis that's indispensable for you?
I guess I live online. So if my laptop ever goes down, I'm in big trouble. I got, like, if you looked at my four screens here, there's one social media platform or another opened on all of them. I'm active on all of them. It's just the world that the Laughing Otter's in. So yeah, my laptop is the tool I really need.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I think for me, I'm the same. Laptop is an incredible tool. I anguished for a very long time in my most recent tech setup whether I'd get a desktop and a iPad or laptop and separate screen, and settled on high powered laptop, big main screen for my work, second screen, which my CRM is open all the time. And see what those questions are up to. Jeff, mate, really appreciate you jumping on today's call and sharing with us your expertise. Again, some really simple takeaways I think people can do to build their business and make things a lot easier for them. And love the passion you bring to the table of why you do what you do as well.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's I hope people get a little bit of help out of that. And it's the passion comes from the heart. And not for all the salespeople in the room, that'll serve you more than all the books in the world. Is just love what you're doing, love the product that you're selling, and you'll sell more than anything else.
Yeah, that passion comes through. Jeff, you can find Jeff at thelaughingadder.com. I'm sure we can find you on all the good social media channels as well, Jeff.
Yep.
Guys, thanks again for joining us on another episode of More Clients, Less Effort. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please like, share, comment, subscribe by clicking the three dots at the top of your favorite podcasting app. And we'll see you on another episode real soon. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of More Clients, Less Effort. Join us next time for another insightful discussion filled with actionable advice and inspiring stories, all geared towards helping you grow and scale your business simply and easily. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app so you never miss an episode. See you next time.